excited for the partnership between yourself and Finn Russell.
Yeah, white chocolate.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe. Game changed.
Hello and welcome to House of Rugby Ireland here on Joe. We're back in studio for our final show of the season. 8 months, 36 shows, 34 guests and over 1 million listens and views later, we're here to put a bow on the season with Fergus McFadden and Ian Madigan. We do have some exciting plans for the summer, however, a kind of British and Irish House of Rugby. We'll be covering the Lions Tour on that. But this is our final episode here for now. We have a great show lined up for you here today. We're going to be joined by Conor Murray shortly, and Pat has a little chat with France legend Philippe Saint-André, who was promoting the big rugby run. But first, we'll chat about the Champions Cup final. Ian, was there any surprise in that result yesterday?
I think Toulouse were expected to win, but it was one of those days where it was nearly everything that could go wrong for La Rochelle did. You know, you look at their indiscipline in the first half, they missed a good few goal kicks and conversions, and then obviously the red card so early in the game, you know, made it really, really hard for them. Yet they were still very much in the game at the very end and potentially should have had a penalty in that last passage of play when kind of Toulouse were messing around, trying to run the clock down, got it wrong and got caught out 5 metres from their line. And it looked like there was a few infringements at that ruck from Toulouse. But look, it was a very frustrating day for Rog. I think the way he coaches that La Rochelle team and the way he has them set up, you know, they play with great width and that combines with their power game. But when you lose one of your centres like that, it really narrows up your attack. You can't play with the same width. You're not running at the same holes. You can't play the offloading game that we've seen La Rochelle play all year. So it was, I'm sure it was a very frustrating day for him. And I think you could see his frustration any time the camera panned to him during the game. He was, you know, the laptop was taking a bit of a battering. Yeah,
absolutely. Ferg, like even you said there, they had to try and work around them because there was no gaps through. And eventually, in the, I think it was the 60th minute, they managed to get that try. But you know, they had defended for so long with 14 men, it was inevitable that at one stage they were going to break them on the edges.
Yeah, well, I think that even you know, taking the red card aside, which obviously was a huge bearing on the result, I think Toulouse probably managed the weather better because you know, I think we were talking a week or two ago when the Toulouse and La Rochelle got to the final and we were saying this could be one of the best finals of all time with the way the two teams play. But it weirdly turned into obviously a very kind of cagey affair where it was very hard to get the ball away. And I just think that Rog said it after the game that there was a lot of unforced errors from La Rochelle. And I think that made them pay. And then, you know, a few missed kicks. You know, you knock over maybe two of the three of them and they're in a winning position at the end where they score that try. So they will be kicking themselves. But I think, like looking back on the tournament and at the two teams throughout the whole thing, I think it's been an unbelievable journey for La Rochelle. And they should, hopefully when the dust settles, Rog and John Gibbs and the squad will look back and say, what a year that's been for them. But I think Toulouse were probably the best team in the competition. They got through some really tough fixtures. They put in some like unbelievable performances and scary enough prospect actually that club now. After they're you know, unfortunately for Leinster, they're the first team to get 5 stars and the only team. And but you're just looking through their team and what they could become in you know 2-3 years' time. They're going to be a very tough team to beat because now they've got a taste of it. You know, DuPont, Intermac.
Yeah. And they're so young. Like, there's so many years ahead of them. That's a thing.
Yeah, with those halfback pairings, you just build a team around those guys. They do have, you know, slightly more ageing back three, like the likes of, you know, Huger, Maidar. They're probably on the home stretch of their career. But, you know, the Toulouse Academy is probably right up there with what Leinster are producing year in, year out. And you can be guaranteed you're going to see quality coming through. So, yeah, there's no doubt that they're going to stay very much at the forefront at the top of the European Champions Cup. And as Ferg said, you know, they had some tough fixtures. We played them in round one, you know, on a really wet night up in Ravenhill. They had to play Munster away, which is, you know, another really challenging game. So, yeah, look, on the balance, they probably deserved it. But they didn't play brilliantly, you know, for a side of their class coming up against 14 men for that long, they only really broke La Rochelle down once for that try, you know, and you saw them turning down, you know, 5-on-3, 6-on-3s and still kicking, you know, and trying to play that kind of territory game, which is almost a bit unnatural for them.
But had the game not been in Twickenham, probably would have been a completely different game as well with the conditions, and we wouldn't have seen that kind of stuff. You know, they were playing territory instead of, you know, they're playing the conditions that were in front of them.
Yeah, no, and in fairness, when Entmac pulled the trigger and he threw that miss pass for the try, like that was a brilliant passage of play, and you know, once they get in behind, they're very hard to stop. But I felt for La Rochelle,
it's not nice to see like a final, you know, ultimately get decided. From someone getting sent off from just one moment, whereas timing is just off, and
yeah,
you know, because it did, you know, it would have been Roy the Rover stuff if La Rochelle managed to pull off a win, but really, you know, they're up against it there for the majority of the game, and it was a bit of a pity that had to happen.
Yeah, and like there was another tackle with the, you know, the Toulouse 12, Aki, you know, he's caught one of the La Rochelle players on the neck. Like for me, that's at least a yellow card. You know, it's a very dangerous tackle, and I'm sure they have their gripes that they get a red card early in the game, doesn't get, you know, returned. And yeah, look, the referees, it probably wasn't their best game. You know, you can see there was definitely a bit of panic at the end. It was almost the opposite to what they were like in the first 25 minutes. They were very trigger happy. They were blowing for everything. You could hear the touch judges sending in messages to give away, you know, penalties or whatnot. The game had no real flow to it. Until it started opening up, you know, in the start of the second half, but certainly wasn't, you know, one of the best finals.
And speaking of that funny situation, we're talking to Connor about, you know, about Zivo telling him that the clock was done and he kicked it out.
It was very similar.
I don't think the final of a Champions Cup is the right place to do that, but I don't know where Intermac was getting his information there, but
it probably was what 6 or 7 seconds off. But like that's a long time when you're like in your 22 on your own camp there.
They must have been licking their lips, the La Rochelle, when they went in there. But it was, a couple of decisions there at the end. Could have gone La Rochelle's way, but, you know, the real reason I think they lost the game is because they got a man sent off, but I think Rog said it as well, ill-discipline and too many unforced errors.
Yeah, and La Rochelle, like, it was not the end of their season. They still have the top 14 to play for next week, so they have to pick themselves back up and play again next weekend.
Yeah, like, it's been a great year for them. They're still at the top of the league, or I think they're second.
Second place,
So they'll go into the barrage where, you know, anyone from 1 to 6 is an opportunity of winning. Being in that top two and getting bye weeks off the back of a very long season is very advantageous. So, you know, they're going to do everything they can to get in one of those top two slots and you know, get a week off, wait for the playoffs between 3rd and 6th and 4th and 5th. But you know, the way they play, there's no reason why they can't, you know, kick on from this. And they should take a lot of confidence from the competition that they can compete with the very best. You know, their performance against Leinster was probably the best performance of the competition. You know, it was very complete, and for me, I couldn't see them getting beaten off the back of that. But you know, fair play to Toulouse, they found a way.
Yeah. Coming up in part two, earlier on, we caught up with Munster, Ireland and three-time British and Irish lion Conor Murray. Check it out.
They will be great value. They'll be great value, and you'll be able to really buzz off them, and they will buzz off one another. And you won't be shy of laughs. Your sides will be sore from laughing. They know each other very well. And do you know what? It's just, I hope they know where to leave things, because it is a show that everyone's going to see, and it's a family show, so they can be bold, the two of them, but good value. So I'm going to tune in.
Conor Murray, welcome to the show. Great to have you on here today. A tough loss for your old halfback partner, Rog, yesterday. Did you manage to see any bit of the game?
I did. I was watching intently. With my La Rochelle hat on, very disappointed for Rog and his team. They were they had done so well to get there from where that club has come from, and they had a lot of chances yesterday. So I'm sure they'll be kicking themselves a little bit, but he's done an incredible job. So I think we'll definitely see more Rog.
The La Rochelle hat on. You looking for a move there next year?
You know, keep the options open, lad.
Exactly.
Curbelo was very good, in fairness to him. I don't think he could get on at the moment. I thought he was brilliant, especially in the second half.
Is that something that you always saw with Rog, obviously playing with him? Did he always look like he was going to go down that route of coaching?
I was talking to someone about this yesterday, about Rog and coaching. He's plied his trade. Like, as a player, obviously, he was a huge leader, you know, well able to kind of defend himself and get the best out of fellas if they weren't pulling their weight around him. I think I would, at the playing with him, it was more so a bad look that Rog would give you, and you kind of fix whatever you were doing wrong, as opposed to him telling you and coaching you through it. So definitely has the respect, and he's gone to New Zealand, he's been in Paris with Racing to learn his trade, and you know, I suppose he's developed his coaching skills, definitely, obviously, from watching the build up to the game yesterday and the way his ex-players he's worked with and his current players talk about him. You know, he's obviously doing a fantastic job. So yeah, really impressed with what he's done over the last few years.
When you joined that Munster squad as a young lad, was he, you know, was he a scary older player, or was he someone that took you under your wing? Like, obviously you had to work very closely together and built that relationship and that partnership over the years, but was it always there, or was something that you had to really work on?
Yeah, when I first came into the Munster squad and Rog was there and these other guys like Paulie and Dunners, it was lads you grew up with, lads who you looked up to an awful lot. And I suppose for me coming in, it was just about doing everything right, you know, especially Rog. You know, throwing a pass to him was probably one of the most daunting things, you know, having watched him growing up your school years and going to Thomond Park and just having him stand outside you was a bit unsettling. So probably helped me improve my pass, you know what I mean? I was just always worried about giving him the perfect ball. And like Mads there, if you threw a bad pass to him, it would be rifled back at you in training until you did it right. So
only if I drop it, not a word said if I catch it.
He always playing
stopping the full session as well.
If you had to jump.
Always someone else's problem when you drop it, is it?
Absolutely, yeah. That's when the blame game starts.
Obviously, Conor, it's been a busy few weeks for you. Huge congratulations and absolutely well deserved in making that third Lions tour. I suppose talk us through, you know, where were you when you got the call, when the announcement was made? Was it something that you had expected over the last few months, or was it a complete shock to you?
It was a weird one, I suppose. Going back to the first one in 2013, I found out early. A journalist that was in London actually found out and rang me about an hour before, which I was kind of disappointed about, because the excitement of finding out on TV is pretty special. 2017, then I was in touch with Warren Gatland because I had injured my neck, so he had rang me a few times just to make sure the neck was going to be okay. And then recently, I had no idea. It was such a weird build-up, I suppose, over the last few years with injury and things like that. I was really nervous. You have a bit of a chance if you feature in Six Nations, but I really didn't know which way it was going to go. And I suppose we had our captains run that morning in Thomond, and lads were like looking to meet up and watch it together. And I was like, I'm getting away, so I just need to be on my own, or whoever was at home. So Andrew Conway followed me home. He was like, I know you want to have a few fellas around you. And Joanna was here in the house. And yeah, we watched it unfold. And obviously they dragged it out a bit with the speeches at the start. And I think I came out quite early in the backs, and incredible feeling. I think this means the most because I've probably had to work the hardest for this one, definitely, over the last 4 years, ups and downs and things like that. So yeah, it was a massive relief, and something I really, really wanted.
I think it puts you in like a kind of a cool group as well now, Mer, because you know, you're talking about Paulie there and Rog, people you looked up to so much, but they're two of the few guys that have managed to go on, you know, three Lions tours or more, and now you're one of them. And you know, it's a small group. Like, it's been a pretty cool journey. I remember coming across you for the first time in the final of 2011 against Munster, when you lads beat us in the Magnus League with the, you had the cool bowler haircut. You should bring that back, actually.
I knew. I can hear the sarcasm from there.
No, but it has the journey. Like, you know, lucky enough to play with you for a number of times with Ireland, but the journey you've been on to get to this point, Because it, like every career that goes on for a long period of time, you've had your doubters as well over the past maybe year. So for this to get this accolade must be extra special.
Yeah, when I said it was something I really wanted, I think, you know, on the last tour, I really enjoyed it. I was playing great rugby, and in my head, I was kind of, you know, obviously you map it out, don't you, when you're looking at like World Cups or whatever. Like I'd be 32, will I still be featuring? And I didn't really think that far ahead, and I suppose the closer it got, the criticism definitely, like, it's no secret, you know, there's been criticism over the last couple of years, and that frustrated me at times because I didn't agree with quite a lot of it. But then you do want to prove them wrong, even if they're not, you know, telling the right story. But that was a big motivator for me. And, you know, and then when the Lions year comes around, you start to think about it again. When the Lions, they send the jerseys to the hotel to do the headshots during the Six Nations camp. And because of COVID this year, you got the jersey sent to your room and you had to have it on, leaving your room and go down to this room to get a shot and put it on, and had a kind of weird moment looking in the mirror, just looking down at the jersey and be like, geez, this would be really cool to wear this again and have a good crack off it. And yeah, when you say those lads who have been on three, geez, that's something I haven't really thought about. I suppose it's something, you know, hopefully I do go on tour and I stay fit and things go well and you can reminisce on stuff like that when you get back from there. But yeah, to be even mentioned in you know, in the same sense as those lads is really really humbling, and I'd like to, you know, go out there and do myself proud. You know what I mean? I haven't been on the last tour and starting. It's, you know, anything I suppose less than that will kind of leave a bad taste in your mouth. So that's what kind of where my head is at the moment, having got on the plane.
Yeah, the timing of it. Like for me, looking from the outside in over the last few years, obviously you've touched on there with, you know, the neck injury you had. But I think this tour has come at a perfect time for you. You know, you've played really well for Munster over the last year. You had a great Six Nations. Like, do you feel physically you're in the best shape you've been in?
Yeah, I do. I honestly do. I think neck-wise is always the one for me. And it's something that is thankfully I've put to bed, because I've had a good few like bangs on it in the past season, and it hasn't really affected me. So I've definitely gone through that rehab process of building up the strength in it, building up you know, upper body strength a little bit more, and you know, having real confidence to go out and play the way I play. I suppose, you know, for me it was like going for a short range tries that I score that you don't get much glamour for, but they were things that I back myself with, like just physically being able to get over like 5 meters out or whatever. And, you know, maybe subconsciously over the last couple of seasons, you're probably worried about hurting yourself. You know, you tell yourself you're not, but you might just pop the ball to someone else and hopefully they'll do it. So I think over the last year or so, I've seen myself do that an awful lot more like I used to. So I think having the confidence to play my natural game like that, I know there's an awful lot of other parts that you have to sort out as well, but that side of things I feel really good. The hamstring injury during the Six Nations probably gave me a chance to just sharpen your tools a little bit more and let other things settle. So yeah, right now I feel great.
Yeah, it's a huge part of it, you know, with scrum halves now. Like, on are the days where the scrum half can just keep moving the ball away from the ruck, you know, and a good pass and a good box kick could be enough. With teams being so well organised defensively, how hard they come off the line, which I'm sure South Africa are going to do on the tour, you need your nine to be able to scoot a bit, sit defenders down, be a threat himself. And, you know, it's been great over the last season seeing, you know, you doing that week in, week out for Ireland and Munster. So hopefully we'll get to see that when you're in the nine shirt for the Lions.
Connor,
fingers crossed, mate.
Did you find it like more challenging this season, obviously with the hamstring injury and then Gibson Park coming in and playing and not having the ring of starts, the amount of starts that you would have had in previous seasons? And, you know, in the English game, was there pressure on you, or like, had you had a conversation with Gatland beforehand, or was that the back of your mind completely about the Lions?
No conversations with Gatland. He was there on the Tuesday of the England game. All right, he came into the circle and he spoke to Tadhg Furlong, and Killer actually gave him a little gag as well, trying to get on the flight. But other than that, there was nothing.
No doubt Killer would be over there on holidays with the boots anyway, just in case.
He's known to travel to those countries where there's a bit of a tour on, isn't he? So he's sussing out a vaccine at the moment for himself. the England game, I suppose. I think with Jameson coming in and playing really well, I think he's a cracking player. I'm sure you all know, like, your head can race to so many different places. And Andy, you know, came up to me on the Tuesday and was like, "Oh, you're going to start this week. You're ready, blah, blah, blah." And then your head completely changes and you get an opportunity to play against England. And I wasn't thinking about Lions. I really wasn't. I knew probably during the week you were a little bit because you'd ran out of chances with the hamstring injury. You just wanted one more because you needed to play in a big game, I suppose, during the Six Nations to show, put yourself in the shop window. So, when that came around, to answer your question, I felt a lot more pressure. With the Ireland thing as well, you know, competition for places has gone up an awful lot more recently, and with the Lions and having not started, you know, having missed three games in the middle of the Six Nations, I was kind of put a lot more pressure on myself. So thankfully, I was part of a really good team performance, which made my job an awful lot easier, myself and other players.
Leading into that English game, or like, you know, the noise coming out of the camp throughout the Six Nations was, you know, we're building, we're working on things in the background. We feel there's a big performance coming. You know, we think it's about to click. But I don't know if the supporters believed it as much as the players and the staff within the camp. Could you sense that week this is going to be a special one for us?
We've nearly been sick of saying that. I know Johnny said that in the media, that we're always saying we're close to it. We're really close to putting a complete performance together. And since I started with Ireland, that when I came into the Irish setup, it was consistency, and you know too, like, that was the word that kept cropping up, was we're just not consistent enough. And I suppose those questions were being asked about our team this season. And I think that the experience in the squad with the players there, that we knew we were putting patches together in games. You know, you look at the Wales game when we had 14 men. We played some really good rugby. Like, I feel that was one of the games that got away this year, Wales away. And you know, the French game with a lot of changes in the team nearly got there, and so on and so forth. And I think in the England week, you know, there's no need for motivational talk. That's all taken care of. The emotion and the passion is going to be there. But we were really keen to put a really complete performance together and not take our foot off the pedal if we got a chance in the game. And you know, and it was spoken about during the week, was that's going to be our last game for how long with that group, you know, with the Lions tour, with summer tour, with changes to the squad. That group probably won't be together, or the bulk of them won't be together again for a long time. So it was great to be able to just get a great performance in and park it. I think that was a big motivation, knowing that we wouldn't get another chance for a long time.
Yeah, you would have been sitting on a loss a long time, you know, with a lot of time to think about that loss, and it would have been a bad way to end the season. So yeah, at least people are coming away from that Six Nations thinking, yeah, that was a great game to finish on.
It's also like test level these days, it's gotten even more ruthless from a, you know, an optics perspective for spectators, for pundits, for everything. It's so, can be quite short-sighted at times, and it's definitely something that I don't miss, because, you know, you could see you guys were building under Andy, and it was just small margins, and I suppose it came together. That England game must have been such a nice pressure release for the whole squad, from the you know, coaching ticket and the players afterwards, just to be able to sit back and have enjoyed a really, really good, that was the best 80 minutes I think Ireland have played in just such a long time.
Yeah, 100%. I think you said it there, a release valve. Because we had the Pro 14 final the week after, back in the hotel post the game, you know, the Munster and Leinster lads trying to get each other drunk and have a bit of crack.
But, get moves out of them.
Exactly. Didn't work, unfortunately. But I remember we were sitting down and we looked over at the staff table with all the staff, the doctors, the physios and the coaches, and you could see it, like, by their mood, that it was a pressure valve just released, because everyone was under pressure that week. You could feel it. You try your best to to focus on what you need to focus on, but it does creep in, and you can tell by people's body language, or they're a little bit snappy. So for the whole thing, that game meant an awful lot for an awful lot of reasons, and for I think not just the players, everyone involved was just happy to see us do something special and kind of hang the jersey up for another while and you know, have it in a good place.
You mentioned about the amount of competition in the squad this year, both in Ireland, but we had quite a few conversations here about our line selection, and I think nine was one that we had a lot of deliberations around and who would go. Did you find it strange that Ben Youngs announced that he wouldn't be available for the Lions tour?
A little bit, I suppose. I think, you know, obviously 4 years ago, the reason was completely... you know, you couldn't question him about that, you know, for his family reasons and his brother, Tom's wife, and thankfully made an unbelievable recovery. That was, you know, that everyone completely agreed with that, I suppose. Yeah, maybe, you know, Ben's been a professional for a long time. He's expecting another child, and he is going to be away from his family for 8 or so weeks. So the reasons are fine. Absolutely. I think the reasons are fine. But then I suppose on the flip side of it, you know, could it be potentially his last tour or a chance to tour with the Lions? You know, he's over 100 caps for England. Would he grin and bear it and maybe go away? But you don't know what's going on with everyone. You know what I mean? It could be a whole different host of reasons. And you know, to spend time with your family and expecting a new child is absolutely fair enough. Ben's a great fella. I toured with him in 2013 and. You know, he was picked ahead of me. I was picked ahead of him towards the end, and we got on really well. And he'd encourage you all the way. A great guy to be on tour with. So I'm sure he would have been his name would have been in the mix.
Yeah, absolutely. You've played with Owen Farrell and Dan Biggar before, but are you excited for the partnership between yourself and Finn Russell?
Yeah, white chocolate. I'm sure I'll get all the info out of Zeebs about how Finn likes to play the game. I've met him a few times. He's a real good fella. Obviously, a fella who plays off the cuff, ridiculous skills, can pull out some ridiculous things and that come off. There's a risk with playing that way as well. But he'll definitely make things interesting. I think he's, over the past 2 years, he's been in special form, and Racing have come really close to winning silverware, especially the European Cup, and he was going to be a big part of that. So, he's been going real well. And Owen and Dan there as well. I think they're all in really good form. So, that's part of the magic about going on tour, is getting to play inside these guys and learn what they're about and really experience it. So, Finn's going to be fun, I would imagine.
What about Simon coming back to Munster?
Yeah, really exciting, I think, for, you know, hopefully the fans will be back. He's a fan favourite, and he knows that. So he said he's coming back to put bums on seats.
As he said but himself, I think he the will. King I think... is back.
Absolutely. He's not shy of that either. He's going to be brilliant. I think. You know, it's important to get Zeebs back motivated. It's important to get him back, and he wants to come back and play for Ireland. You can tell by him, you know, it kills him to, you know, when he left, I think the Grand Slam was won pretty soon after he left. And I think that was a tough one to take for him, and he made his decisions to go. And he's enjoyed Paris. I think he's had the time of his life there, and he's played some really good rugby. So he's 30 now, I think. So getting him back, he's still a good few years of good rugby in him. He adds an awful lot to the changing room, to the energy around the place. The fans love him. And he's going to increase his try scoring record, as he says to Earlsey. He has no hope of catching him.
I think it's exciting though for a squad. I think people don't really realise, you know, when a big character like someone like Zeebs comes back to you guys, who's been there during a period, you know, with you, you know, with learning, sponging off those older guys that won the few Heineken Cups with Munster, and to get a character like that back into the change room that's, you know, as passionate as he is about the club, and then you've got the likes of RJ Snyman, who'll be back fit again. Like, it, you know, you'd like to think, and the young guys that have done so well for Munster this year, you'd like to think, you know, the next year, you know, is looking good for you guys.
I hope so. It's nearly going back to the point you were saying about Ireland, about we're sick of saying we're really close to something and something clicking, and that's unfortunately for most of my career. Since the 2011 game, we haven't managed to win anything, and we've been
kind of definitely really a reason to get the hair back.
The lucky,
the lucky. Maybe I'll do it.
Lucky mushroom.
If we can get a bit of silverware, yeah. That was terrible. That was terrible. I think with obviously Orji Snyman, having him in our ranks, you know, he played, I think, 13 minutes is all. You know, I'd love to see him up and running, you know, as a player and a fella. He's a really, you know, he hasn't played much. It's been really difficult for him coming to Munster and being injured, coming to live in a new country and not really being part, you know, once you're injured in a long-term injury, you're kind of part of a different group of players. You know, you kind of, you're away from the crack an awful lot. And he's been really good. He's kind of made sure he's around the training ground, you know, make sure he's making an effort to know the lads. So I think he's a fella who's bought into it. Obviously with Damien Diolande there, who's, I think he's unbelievable. I think he's been class this year. He'll cruise around training, cruise around the gym, but then come game time, he literally comes to life. Since the World Cup, I thought he's been in special form as well. So yeah, I think Zeeb's coming into the mix there as well. You know, I think again, would I have to mention Mike Haley? He's been incredible this year. You know, and obviously hearing about Zeeb's coming back, you know, he could have taken that either way, and he's put his performances up a notch as well. So yeah. We have the squad now we definitely have the squad, whereas before there might have been one or two areas you'd be concerned about, but there's definitely a complete squad there with everyone fit and you know, with our coaching set up with Steve, especially Steve Larkham there in terms of our attack. I think that's really come on this year, and it's exciting.
I think when you're losing a few characters as well, Murr, you know, you got Billy Holland, who, you know, he is, you know, gonna go down as you know, one of the club's legends. You know, what a servant, and CJ for what he's done since he come over here, and you know, James Cronin as well. So they're, you know,
JJ,
the three
JJ, big characters,
yeah.
As well.
And JJ, yeah. Sorry, yeah, JJ, even JJ. Yeah. So losing those guys, you know, it's just as well. The likes of Zeebs is coming in. I think it'll be a great boost as well for the group when you're losing characters like that.
Yeah, I haven't thought about that too much, about the crop we're going to lose. It'll be a dent in the squad for sure, for loads of reasons. Billy has been incredible. You see the work he does behind the scenes for everybody, not just lineouts. He's literally making sure everyone is crystal clear in what they're doing, and he knows the game plan inside out. He's literally one of the coaches now as well. So like he's a massive loss. Someone's going to have to step into that role. I don't know if it'll be Zeebs looking after the detail of things, but we'll have to recruit someone else for that kind of role. JJ, massive loss again as a 10 who you feel for him, because he went around it the hard way. You know, went to Northampton and applied his trade there and played well enough, came back and has been playing really well, and is still quite young. So I think he's going to be a massive loss. And Jamesy as well, and Tommy O'Donnell. Loads of lads who have a lot of caps for Munster, who know what it means to be a proper Munster man and what we're trying to achieve. It's going to be a dent, definitely. But I suppose having Zeebs, who is definitely a character and a big player, you know, will help offset that a bit.
Yeah, Conor, what's been great this year has been, I know obviously you're losing some phenomenal players, but what we've seen with the young boys coming through, like Gavin Coombs, and there's so many, like Ben Healy, Craig Casey, they've really stood up, and you know, they've
Craig
just fit it in.
Craig Casey's not great.
I agree. Terrible.
Like they really just stood up and kind of fitted in seamlessly as well, which is really great to see. That, you know, there is plenty of like West Cork players, like Munster lads, that have come up through the ranks.
Mm. They're incredible. That crop of lads. And there's more. You know, you've Thomas Ahern, you've Jack Crow, you've loads of them that are there. And that group of players are unbelievably professional. They're always in the gym. They're always doing extras. In terms of like their attitude to being a professional rugby player, you know, they don't need any work or any push in that direction. I think that's really exciting. I think, you know, for me, every day going training with Craig is, you know, it's a competitive day. He's a bit of a lunatic. Like he wants to win. You know, you jog out to the 22 and back for a warm up. He wants to win it. He's one of these characters, and I think it's been. You know, lads say, oh, you'd rather not have the competition, but you definitely do. You it brings out the best in you every day. Literally, there's no let up. And Ben Healy as well, he's constantly doing extras and trying to get those little margins as well. So I think, yeah, that group of young people, they've come from a really successful under-20s team for a couple of years, and they have really good habits. They have a habit of winning as well. The confidence of them is incredible. Funny almost. So, yeah, there's a great crop to kind of bolster it up there. And yeah, homegrown talent, which is what we're after.
We had John Cooney on a few months ago, actually, and it was right after the game where himself and Craig Casey sprinted off the pitch. Like they had the race off the pitch. Would that be like, they obviously did it. They did it in good spirits, like, but does that just sum up like Craig Casey's competitiveness that he just wants to get off the pitch and win that?
To a T, exactly. Like I'm not joking when literally everything, whether it's making coffees in the in the training center, like he wants to make the best one and things like that. So it's almost tiring for me at times because I've been around a while now and you have to kind of re-energize yourself again. But no, you love to see that kind of enthusiasm coming through from that group of lads.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, it was gas with John. Like obviously we won that game and we were all happy out. But he was so smug afterwards. Yeah. Like, and it kind of kicked off a bit on social media. And,
you put it on Instagram and everything.
Yeah, you think for like a 30, 31-year-old racing, you know, 18, 19-year-old off the pitch, he'd have been embarrassed that people spotted it and put it up. But he was absolutely delighted and he was like, yeah. Because he spotted that Craig loved running in. And literally when the halftime whistle went, just bolted off and into the change room.
I remember seeing it. I was watching it at home and I stood up. I was like, is this happening here? You could like a full on battle and the tunnel gets quite tight, doesn't it? And Ravenhill, like they're nearly shouldering each other into the thing.
It was like an under 8 sports day, you know.
Funny until one of them pops their hammer trying to sprint off the pitch, you know.
Yeah.
Connor, is this the year finally that Munster will finish with a bit of silverware? It's looking good at the moment with the Rainbow Cup. A few rounds left, you know, it would be nice to finish, especially for the likes of lads like CJ, Billy, JJ, Tommy, all those boys that are finishing off.
We still have a chance, obviously it depends on Treviso and hopefully Connor can do us a favour there. Yeah, absolutely. I think no matter what it is, to win something as a group is incredibly special. And I think it's something, you know, it's not the European Cup, it's not the Pro 14, but it's something that hopefully we can you know, give the lads a send off. Because at the moment you're kind of playing games, you know, there's Interpro after Interpro and it's a strange tournament to be in, but you know, and you're like, I remember looking at CJ last week after we played, and I said, geez, I don't know how many games I have left with this guy, and after fellas like that and Billy as well, after all they've given over the years, and you know, for it to fizzle out would be a shame. So yeah, I think everyone in Munster is really motivated to make the final. The next two games are going to be really important. And yeah, you'd love to, you know, it's the perfect way to send fellas off is with a bit of a celebration and a cup. We don't know what the cup looks like, but
it's sure a rainbow. It's a rainbow.
You had a goal at the end of the day as well. But we were chatting actually when the Rainbow Cup fixtures came out earlier on that come the business end of the season that it's obviously clashing with the Lions preparation and that. So I imagine the teams won't be at full strength either because like it's coming up, it's so close to the lines essentially.
Yeah, I don't know how that's gonna work out. I think we're heading over this week and we're a bit of administration and stuff, so I presume we'll find out whether people involved. I think lads, I think in the Premiership are okay to play in the Premiership final if they're involved. So hopefully they allow lads a chance to, you know, win a final. I think that'd be quite important. It does overlap with the training camp, but hopefully.
Speaking of the Lions again, I think that clip popped up. It was on Instagram or something. The one of you and Zeebs from the Lions tour when Zeebs. Sorry, it's the one. One of the clips is he tells you the clock is done when it's not, and you kicked it off the field, and he's laughing. But then the other one was Zeebs ringing Rob Penny about being captain, and it's just brilliant. I'd say that sort of stuff is going to be. It's going to be great because it's obviously there's a few guys you've toured with before, but those kind of things are pivotal really to have that sort of stuff in and around training and playing just to kind of get a bit of crack and forge a few relationships.
Yeah, I think it's going to be even more important now with COVID and not knowing how open the camp or the bubble can be once we're down there. So yeah, you're right. I think those kind of things, the dice rolling for breaking silly rules and things like that. It's going to be really important. So, yeah, you're hoping, I think Gatland's really good at that. I think, you know, in terms of understanding a touring side, in understanding that it's four nations coming together as one, you do need a lot of opportunities to have a bit of crack and to get to know each other. I think, you know, in terms of, you know, rugby ability, you know, that's, there's loads of that in the squad and coming together and, you know, understanding how to play a particular style of rugby. I think that'll be achieved a lot quicker than, these relationships that need to form. They're really important. And you do genuinely make friends for life from a tour like that. You know, there's certain lads that you will always stay in touch with and get on really well with. Hopefully it's the same again with new lads coming into a touring party and we all get on well. And there'll be hopefully a few highlights like that from the court sessions.
Yeah. Is there any game or moment that has stood out over the last two Lions tests for you? Like what is, you know, when you think back of your career as a Lion, what is the one thing that you think about? Apart from kicking the ball out early.
That was crazy. That was the Wednesday before the second test where everyone knew there was a few injuries in the starting team and there was actually chances to get involved in the test squad and your man is prancing around the field having gags, but that's himself. I think the test in Wellington, the second test, the last tour was obviously we wanted all that kind of stuff, but having my sister lived in Auckland at the time and my mom and sister came down and they managed to get to that game and seeing them afterwards back in the hotel was a real cool moment, just going back to the hotel and chilling out with your friends and family. Having done something like that, having beaten the All Blacks in New Zealand, which was really special, but it was just to be able to have your friends and family there was huge. You know, they've been to loads of rugby games and things, but that was really special having them there and ringing home and catching up with my dad at home and stuff was meant an awful lot. So moments like that really, really hit you that, you know, they're really proud of you. My mom wouldn't tell me that often, but she told me that night, you know, we're really proud of what you're doing and what you've achieved tonight. And they're the people you play for, really, at the end of the day, your loved ones. So I think doing that this time around, you know, maybe getting a chance to get them down to a game would be really special. That's what motivates most players, I think.
Yeah, well, hopefully they will make an appearance down there. And Conor, the best luck in the upcoming tour. We're really, really excited to see you. And thanks so much for coming on here today.
Cheers, guys. Pleasure.
Best of luck.
Cheers, Mary. Best of luck.
Before we wrap up with our own reflections on the season and our own awards, here's some of past interview with French rugby legend and Montpellier coach Philippe Saint-André.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe. Game changed.
I was looking back on your own career, just to kind of see your past battles with Ireland and stuff. And I'd seen that as a player, you played them seven times and you never lost to them as well. I was kind of, was there ever a game that where they pushed you close or anything, or any tight calls against Ireland over those years in the 90s?
Well, I remember because I was playing against one winger who was for me amazing. He was Simon Guégan. And to be fair, he was very unlucky to be not in one great generation of Ireland, because each time he had the ball, he was amazing and he was a match winner, but he didn't have too many balls because what the name, first French team, we were very strong. So, and after I have so many memories because I play with the Barbas in Ireland, and when we beat South Africa in Dublin, and it was a lot of Irish players. But after, to be honest, when I was coach, I drew two times against Ireland, but I never win against Ireland. So, of course, in players, I beat them seven times. But my record in coaching is very, very poor. So, but, you know, it's I think it's rugby, and it's all the time, you know, great to play or to see a different nation, different culture and different nationality. You know?
Yeah, for me, like, I was kind of, like, I suppose, I would have started watching rugby properly maybe the early 90s and stuff. And yeah, it was often tough watching Ireland, but there was a few guys that kind of used to stand there for us, maybe like the likes of Popplewell and Gagan, yeah, who we all loved as well, and Keith Wood. I was kind of, did you ever get to play with those guys for the Barbarians then as well?
Yeah, I played, I think it's 1994. I think South Africa was so strong. And if I remember, if I was exact, I think they beat England, they beat Wales, they beat Scotland, they beat France. And I think because Ireland was not strong at this moment, they decide to not play Ireland, but they play the Barbas, you know. And Simon Guégan was on one wing, me, I was in one other wing. The front row was Irish front row, you know. And we beat South Africa. And to be honest, it was the first time that the Irish supporter was behind me. I think I remember I scored a try and people was behind me. So it was real. And we beat South Africa. And I think it's the only game they lost in this tour. It was in Dublin against the Barbas, you know.
Wow. And yeah, you mentioned that, like, the coaching experience against Ireland, and just I remember being at that game in 2015 at the World Cup, and just what a kind of brutal game it was in terms of, like, the physical cost for the players. Do you have kind of any kind of major memories of that? Like, I remember even Sean O'Brien talking about having to keep his discipline and then giving Pascal Pape a box after 4 minutes.
Yeah, but I think, to be honest, I think this game was a disaster for Ireland and for us, because everybody wanted to win these games to not play the All Black in quarterfinal. But this game was so much physical, so much tough, and it was the Irish team won and they deserve it, and they deserve it to beat us. They had 4 or 5 injuries after the game, and they lost in quarterfinal against Argentina. And us, we were suffer mentally, but also physically, because what's the name? The guys was exhausted and knackered during 48 hours. And I don't remember the scores than we did against the All Black, but it was a disaster. So I think, you know, this game and this big game on the last pool stage was a disaster for the two countries. And you realize on this, in 2015, I think all the countries have a tough game, the last pool stage. They've been off in quarterfinals. So it's for this, and rugby, I think, you know, it's a physical sport, and it's very difficult for players to play a top game and a tough game and try to play 4 or 5 days after, because rugby is so much intensity, so much impact, so much physical, so much hard also mentally, and the guys after need to be fresh.
Yeah. And then, like, for yourself, like, even looking back, like, you got into the coaching game pretty early, like, after you retired. Like, it was in Gloucester back in 1998 when Can you think back to maybe like any advice you'd give to that guy back then, the stuff you know now?
Yeah, it was amazing because, you know, I finished my career in England because I wanted to see what is professional rugby, because in France it was amateur, semi-professional, but not professional. So I finished my career in Gloucester and with the Shed, an amazing club, and Tom Walkinshaw was the chairman. I didn't speak one word in English in the beginning. I was speaking French, a little bit of Spanish, but nothing. And it was amazing because I learned a culture. I play in different stadium, and I see a different way to coach, you know. And I think 2 or 3 years after, you know, I was the director of rugby of Gloucester and coaching this team and starting my new job. So, but, you know, I never expect to do this before, but rugby was my passion and started to be my job. So, you know, I can't complain, because I must say thank you each day, because, you know, never I expect that I will earn money by rugby and by my passion, because when I play very young, rugby was completely amateur, and my parents coaching say you need to be good in school, you need to learn, you need to do university, because this is not a job, you know, it's just a sports, and just enjoy yourself.
Yeah, yeah. And in terms of just the journey you had, because I know you went over and did a bit of coaching back in France, but then looking at that Sale team that you were involved in, like, just that was almost like an early version of the Galacticos. Like, some of the guys that were involved there were incredible. Like, it must have been great to kind of be a coach of that, but how do you bring together so many different nationalities there to kind of go and win the Premiership then in 2006?
Yeah, I think, you know, it was interesting because the first year, I arrived and I saw a lot of video before of this team, and Sale Sharks at this time had a great backs, you know, with Jason Robinson, Charlie Oxon, Mark Coeto, and Steven Lay. But when I was watching the video, my feeling was that on the tough game and the big games, they needed a little bit more of power in front, you know, and power in the forwards. So when I signed, you know, I bring Sébastien Bruno, Fernandez Lobé, and Chabal. I bring 3 guys with power, 1 Argentine and 2 French players. And Chabal, I was coaching him in Bourgoin, so he followed me. And the first year, we won the Challenge Cup, you know. And the second year, we started to build a great team, because also Sale Sharks did an amazing job in the academy, and guys like Schofield, Chris Jones, Magnus Lund, Ben Foden, Wigglesworth was in the academy, and it started to be an amazing team, because I bring some overseas player, but not a lot, but some overseas player, because in the puzzle, he was missing some piece, you know. And after also the quality of the academy and the squad of Sale Sharks, and straight away, you know, we won the Guinness Premiership. It was against Leicester, you know, by 33 or 38 points, and I coached this team for 5 years, and I had great memories, because Manchester was amazing, the supporters, the fans, the sponsor, Brian Kennedy, the chairman, was great for me, and he came to sign me. I was coaching Bourgoin, and, you know, I keep so much contact still with some player of Sale, and all the time, you know, it's amazing when I am back in Manchester, because I have a lot of friends, and my daughter was born there, so, you know, so it's a big part of my life, you know.
Yeah. Just as you mentioned, Manchester, was kind of thinking that would have been like the Ferguson era as well, when they were at the very top. Did you ever come across him or anything, or go see United or anything at the time?
Yeah, of course. I meet him, I spoke with him, and it was funny because we were in Carrington, you know, and for camp, and it was us, and it was pitch and no things. He was in the beginning, we have some like a caravan for changing room and everything. And after, it was Manchester City, and after, Manchester United camp. So, you know, it was rugby. And And after, of course, I meet him and I ask him questions about coaching, about management and everything. And what he was good, he was in the being. They didn't, newspaper didn't speak about us, you know, because Manchester City, Manchester United, rugby league, football also. It was more about Stockport football in national streets and rugby. So what I try to do, I think it was each Tuesday lunchtime, newspaper to come to eat with us. Mm. And in the beginning, nobody wanted to come, and we started to win. So it was few newspapers arriving. And after, it was more and more. And they were eating with Chabal, Luke McAllister, Jason Robinson, Coeto. And say, it's amazing. It will never happen in soccer. And we started to have more and more quotes in the newspapers. The stadium started to be full. You know, so we started from scratch and from zero, but it was an amazing adventure in sale.
Good luck with it all, and good luck with the you know, if you get out, even just to stretch your legs on the Saturday after it's all over. But it was lovely talking to you. Thanks very much for that.
Thank you very much. Take care. Bye bye.
House of Rugby Ireland. Tell us what you think by comment and rating us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
Philippe was helping to promote the big rugby run, which took place on Saturday to raise funds towards Tackle Your Feelings initiatives in the rugby community. You can find out more and make a donation at thebigrugbyrun.com. Right, lads, it's near the end of the season here. I wanted to see what your highlights of the season were. So we'll start with the show and personally. Ferg, what has been your personal and highlight of the show?
A highlight of the show is probably seeing Mad Squeal on Shock Tactics. That was particularly enjoyable.
Highlight of the show was you getting back on the show.
Was that your highlight?
Yeah, true. Actually. Personally, it was probably getting back on the show. But yeah, there's been so many great memories, I think, on the show, in fairness, since I've been back involved. Some great guests. I think you know, last week with Scott Fardy and Adam Ashley Cooper, that was really enjoyable. You know, Scott finishing up, and you know, Ian's obviously played with Adam as well. But I think the three of us have had some brilliant guests, lucky enough to get some of those South African guys on. I need to work on my pronunciation for a couple of
names. Oh my God,
yeah. It's pretty bad a few times, but
don't think you're the only one. What about you?
Yeah, like similar to Ferg, I think the Shock Tactics was a great addition halfway through the season. Fair play to Anto. I think that's his baby. He's done a cracking job with us. I think myself and yourself were squirming a bit when we were going through, you know, old memorabilia that players had to bring up. But the Shock Tactics is a bit of fun and gets the best out of people. For me, guest-wise, I think Ugo Monya was one that definitely stood out. You know, he's doing a cracking job with BT. I think he's one of the best pundits around. Mm-hmm. And he just brought great energy. It was great to kind of get his insight into, you know, how he thought the game in the UK and France compares to the league we have here in Ireland. And the other one for me, I think Nigel Owens, getting him on. And, you know, I've my own kind of views on rules and what changes I think could help the game or make the game safer, and hearing his opinions on that, you know, was very interesting.
Yeah, it was. We had some really great guests. Like, even Marcel was great on. He was really good fun. Like, just, and I think it was great timing as well, the fact that he was leaving Ulster and people got like an insight into him before he left. You know, it wasn't, they got to know the player off the field instead of just the player, like what everyone sees on the TV. So Marcel was great. Yeah, Nigel was great. That was one of the first interviews as well. And like, so my personal highlight was actually managing to get an intro right first time, but it didn't happen very often.
Tough when it looks, Seymour. It's tough, isn't it?
Sitting in this chair. So is there any lessons learned from this? It's not, I suppose I've learned that it's very hard to make rugby players into you know, work in a studio here and all the work that goes on behind the scenes. You know, there's so much, like, you don't realise how much goes on with, like, the script writing and all the way they cut it and make us look like we know what we're talking about all the time.
Don't be giving them too much credit. Like, yeah, no, the lads have been unbelievable in the background on it. Lessons learned for me, I'd say, back to the pronunciation of a few names. I think you can see from the outtakes that they did as well. At times, we probably don't do you any favours when we're pissing ourselves laughing in the back end either, Eimear. So
yeah, or like trying to do an intro and Ian just sneezes in the middle of it. I actually got it right that time and everything. What about the Irish player of the season, Mads? Who do you think?
I think Robbie Henshaw for both, you know, Leinster and Ireland has had a great year, and I think everyone's really excited to see what he can do on this Lions tour. You know, he's at the very peak of his career and it's come at the right time for him. You know, it'd be hard to argue with him. What do you think, Fergie?
Yeah, I think Robbie and Tadhg Byrne, I think at the test level, you know, Tadhg Byrne's, you know, people, we talked to him on the show about, he was a really enjoyable guest actually. I thought he was unbelievably honest about his journey and the pitfalls and stuff, really enjoyable. But just his journey to going on the Lions from even just before the Six Nations, never mind him getting, you know, booted out of Leinster, people wouldn't have thought he was going to be starting for Ireland. And all of a sudden he literally talked about grabbing an opportunity when he got that start. There was a couple of injuries and he never looked back. So he'd be up there, himself and Robbie, I think the two best players of the year in Ireland.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubts with that, with those two. What about your provincial level? I think I was thinking about it earlier on. I think Tom Daly's been phenomenal for Connacht.
Yeah.
And obviously captained them last weekend, which is, you know, like to come on a loan from Leinster to now captain in Connacht was a great one last weekend. And then obviously getting the win.
Yeah, what a huge win for Connacht that was.
Yeah. And then I think in Mike Haley has been phenomenal for Munster and is just so consistent. I feel Mike Lowry for Ulster again, when he was at 15 especially in that jersey, he just was week after week. Don Cooney,
John's had another great year, like off the back of, you know, some international disappointments. You know, it would have been, you know, easy for him to have felt that and his performance to have dipped off, but just seeing how hard he works, you know, day in day out in the club. And I think it was almost epitomised by when he went off in the Leicester game, that, you know, how reliant we are on, you know, he's our key guy and our game revolves around him. So, look, he's had a cracking year and I'm sure he's going to bounce back and hopefully finish the season off well.
Yeah, what do you think about your provincial? I never mentioned Leinster. I think Rhys Ruddock has been just
great.
You
never, ever mentioned Leinster.
Well, I know, sorry. We have to bring it back. We must do it. Yeah. Rhys, and deservedly so from all those, like, really, really great club performances that Leinster got onto the Irish squad, and it was totally deserved.
Yeah, I think Rhys and probably Jack Conan. Jack Conan came back from injury before Christmas. He, I don't know how many Man of the Match awards he picked up. You know, was pivotal in a couple of the knockout games for Leinster and the game he played against England. He took his chance. So Jack's been outstanding. Obviously, Rhys. Throughout the other provinces, I'd say, I think Nick Timoney's been brilliant. Yeah. Like, I think he's a really underrated player. I'd say he could play for Ireland if he keeps playing the way he is. It's obviously huge backlog in a number of guys, but he was brilliant against Leinster there a few weeks ago. He was unbelievable. Like, he never really has a bad game. He gets through some amount of work. Really impressed by him. Also, Conor Fitzgerald from Connacht. I think the opportunities he's gotten at 10, he's been brilliant. You know, after moving there from Munster. So there's a number of guys. I think, you know, if you look back on the year for Irish rugby, I think, you know, the fans, the expectations are extremely high, and it's understandably so. But, you know, there's a lot to look forward to next year, I think, for fans from a provincial level and an Irish level. You know, to finish like that, like they did against you know, beating England in the manner they did, to have the number of players that are going over on the Lions, the tourists, and then just the younger crop that have gained that experience in Ulster, in Connacht. You talk about Tom Daly, a young captain, like a Leinster team that, granted, you know, gutting for them to get knocked out in the semi, but, you know, young group of guys. Connor was just on talking to us about the group of Munster guys coming up, Gavin Coombs, Craig Casey. You know, it's an exciting couple of years ahead for Irish rugby.
Yeah, I think across the board for the provinces, it's been that theme, and very much so for us up in Ulster. You know, it's been a disappointing year in the sense that we haven't got any trophies, you know, and that's ultimately, I think, how all the provinces measure their success at the end of a season. But we've blooded some really good young guys, you know, in the front row. You've got the likes of Callum Reid, Bradley Roberts, Dave McCann in the back row, someone like James Hume, Michael Lowry, Ethan McElroy, like all these guys who've got, you know, huge amounts of game time, effectively like their first or second breakthrough season, which is probably the most challenging. And I think that the biggest challenge after that is backing it up, because, you know, teams are going to start scouting those young guys now, figuring out their weaknesses and, you know, defending against their strengths. So it's going to be interesting to see now how the likes of Craig Casey and Ben Healy and stuff kick on and into next season.
Yeah, it's been a year like no other with the amount of games there's been between the Pro 14, the Autumn Nations, the, you know, finishing off the Pro 14. It feels like it all just jumped. There was no gap in rugby this year, and then the Rainbow Cup extended on.
It's been mad. Like, I've been here back for 1 year, and I've played in, you know, last year's league, this year's Rainbow Blitz, the, you know, last year's Champions Cup, this year's Champions Cup, this year's Challenge Cup. Like, it's something like six competitions I've played in one season. So it's been challenging both mentally and physically, and I think this break coming up is going to be well earned from all the players and coaches.
Speaking of players that are standing out, like, we can't not mention Emer.
The women's,
you know, you made
the team of the year, or Six Nations team of the
Six Nations. Congratulations!
Yeah,
anything to say about that again?
Yeah, thank you. I suppose while we're on, and we can chat about like the women's players of the year. Yeah. Like, you know, obviously, like there's been so many standout performances, and like that the young ones have really stood up. Like, I think, like obviously, Babe, and like everyone is talking about it, but genuinely, it's totally deserved. Like, you see the work she puts in behind the scenes, Dorothy Wall, another one who's so young but has so many years rugby ahead of her. Kayla Maloney was great for us again this year, and like just really great to see like new players coming through, and like it's going to be an exciting, very exciting 12 months for us ahead of that World Cup next year, hopefully, if we qualify with the qualifiers at the end of the year. But yes, so it's great to get them in there as well. And then finally, World Player of the Season. Is there any real doubt?
It's got to be the skipper from Toulouse yesterday, I think, anyway. I think Antoine Dupont has been...
Yeah.
He's been unbelievable. Yeah. Like, is it, what age is the guy? 24? Is he 25?
Yeah, he's... Yeah, early...
Early 20s, anyway, yeah.
Like, he's some head in his shoulders as well. And to be... I know he's an unbelievable player, but to be skipper of that side as well and stuff, it's just...
It was clear as well. It was funny in that game yesterday. It was clear that Rog had a plan to get at him. And I thought the plan actually worked very well. Like, you know, he didn't have as much time or as much space as he'd usually get. You know, they're drawing a forward back from the ruck to then shoot up and try and take his time away. But sure, as night follows day, he still had his big moments in the game. Like, that break he made and to have the vision to put that crossfield kick in. And that was probably one of the best tackles I've ever seen that Dumaru made on Colby. Like, his ability to get him into touch there was phenomenal. But... yeah, I think Dupont, even playing against him, we played them in round one, and he was just...
Do you just stand back in awe? Like, or are you kind of like, oh, Jesus, do you know he's so
not,
good?
You try not to, yeah.
Try not to, but...
Yeah, when he runs past you, you're not exactly in awe. But, yeah, he's the complete nine, I think, and probably the complete rugby player at the moment. I think Aaron Smith was quoted during the week saying that he's the best nine in the world, which is... some compliment for someone who's probably held that title for a good few years.
And finally, what would a show be without a Lions prediction, Ferg? Who's going to win the test? The series?
Oh, it's going to be a huge challenge for them. And I know that South Africa haven't played a game since the World Cup final, but I think that the South African, you know, backroom staff seem like a really, really strong coaching ticket there. That'll have them primed and ready. So I'm hopeful the Lions can pull off a test victory of 2-1. I think they need to catch them in the first game, though. I think they need to beat them in the first match, because they won't have played mixing up a team that's going to play against the United States.
Yeah, that's going to be the big chance. Get the first one. I think the second one could be at altitude, maybe, which is always going to be the tricky one. But then if they don't win that, then, you know, put absolutely everything into it. But I'd agree. I think it's going to be really tight. I think it's going to be a 2-1 victory either way. But I think the Lions could sneak it, just because they've played more rugby. I think that preparation that South Africa have had, I don't think they're going to win that first game, which is going to really put them up against it.
Yeah. Well, guys, it's been great. Cheers to everybody for watching and listening. Really big huge thanks to producer Pat, Paul, Anthony, Dearman, and everyone that has helped in getting this show together over the last 8 months. This has been House of Rugby Ireland here on Joe. Slongafull.
Slong.
House of Rugby Ireland here on Joe. Game changed.